Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
But now, my first guest today changed popular music and in a sense changed the world as Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols, but it turned out he was only getting started. John Lydon, hello to you in LA.
Oh, peace and love.
And you've chosen some songs for us today that have meant something to you in your life. But before we get to that, John, you're touring in Ireland this summer with your band Public Image Limited, but you're also doing a kind of an in-person Q&A tour that is going to lots of venues all over the country. And of course, your parents are both Irish. You nearly represented Ireland in the Eurovision. How would you characterise your relationship with Ireland and your Irish heritage now?
Well, being brought up in England, it was very difficult because you were viewed as Irish. And you go back to Ireland every summer for your holidays and you're viewed as English. So it a juxtaposition of negativities, which somehow or the other, I managed to turn into a positive. So I'm a success story across the Irish Sea.
Okay, so are you an English success story or an Irish success story?
At the moment, I'm an American success story because this is now where I live.
You certainly are. I think anyone who's made it to LA is doing all right in life. So your dad, Jimmy, was from Galway and he went to England age 14, like, which I guess was probably not unusual back then. What was he like?
A troublemaker. Bit rowdy, had a penchant for being associated with gangsters, a pleasant enough fella that obviously liked me being the firstborn, but was very, very difficult with me from there on because he wanted me to understand car engines and I have no engineering aptitude at all.
Okay, so it was a case of he was kind of thinking, where did I get this guy?
Yeah, really. But my mum taught me how to read and write at a very early age, so he was kind of impressed with me. He turned out to be one of my best friends towards the end of his life. And it's funny that that relationship really only began when I left home.
Okay, and tell me about that friendship that blossomed at the end of his life.
Well, that we could talk honestly and he would fill in memory gaps because, you know, I was seriously ill when I was young and I lost my memory for some 4 years and I wanted the bigger picture and he gave it to me. Boy, God, did he give it to me. Lots go on in Irish families.
Yeah. Was he proud of you, John?
Yeah, he was. He was. But his infamous advice was always, why don't you write a decent tune?
And tell me about that four-year memory gap. So you became quite ill with meningitis, was it? How old were you?
I was 7.
And what happened?
Well, I spent a year in hospital. All memories were erased. It was very, very difficult for me to, when I came out of the hospital, to know who they were. As far as I was concerned at 8, I was sold off to these complete strangers. And I've got to say, my mum and dad, for enduring that.
Yeah.
All praises be. And I've loved them to pieces ever since. They're both dead, may they rest in peace, but they were the guiding light to me to come back to find myself. They followed the hospital instructions of don't mollycoddle him. And indeed, here's the end result. I clawed my way through. I had to decipher what adults were lying to me and what were not. And so that's given me many gifts in return. So I can truly say meningitis was more of a blessing in the long term.
Yeah, so you say about the English-Irish thing and then that and having to basically figure out what it meant to be a person and who you were again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All this together made you the kind of individual you are, yeah? The individual you were.
Yeah, yeah. To quote a magazine song, which we're not playing here today, but Shot by Both Sides, I just adored that record.
Yeah.
And I understood it fully because that's what it was like, trying to go back to school, not knowing anyone, and everybody, because of the nuns and their cruelty and me being naturally left-handed, I felt victimised practically the whole time. But my nickname was, for years, Johnny Dum Dum. Progressed to rotten.
Will we get to music, so, in your first song choice? So this is from, I guess, the kind of birth of rock and roll in a sense. Gene Vincent, Bebopalula. Why did you choose this?
Because when I was young, Mum and Dad would take us to the fairgrounds. It wasn't music that was played on the radio. It was still classical music was all you would be able to hear. But at the fairgrounds, the rock and roll blasting out. And Gene Vincent, oh, so loud over these tannoys, the excitement of it all, and being a funfair, has left an everlasting impression on my mind. I just love Gene Vincent every time I hear anything he's ever done. It was very, very impressive to my young eyes. I love the bravery of their outfits.
Okay, let's have a listen to it. John Lydon's first choice today, Gene Vincent, Bebopalula.
Well, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby. Well, she's the gal in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the team. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby, my baby, my baby.
Let's rock!
Okay, that's Gene Vincent, Bebopalula, and that is John Lydon's first music choice for us today. You see, John, I'm listening to that, and people regard punk as having been something that tore up the rule book and changed everything. But you listen to that, and you'd be tempted to think that was punk actually a return to those basics of rock and roll and rockabilly, yeah?
Yeah, to the basics, yeah. Instruments we were learning on ourselves. It was very much a do-it-yourself kind of vibe. But I never wanted the title rock and roll to be applied to us, because that would be pretending we belonged to another era.
So when you were getting into music, I guess prog and glam were the big British movements of the 70s. So were you listening to that kind of music?
Very much, but all kinds, you see. Remember, Dad... they loved music and they were avid record collectors. And so I was open to a lot of fresh ideas at the time and grew up just loving being the DJ at their parties, which meant I'd stack 8 singles on a dance set and take congratulations for it.
What kind of stuff would you play?
Everything. But my mum and dad, they loved the reels and jigs, of course, but... because our neighbourhood was so varied, there were bits of Cypriot in there, bits of Turkish, bits of Greek, a lot of British pop. I mean, the Kinks, when I first heard, was when my mum and dad bought You Really Got Me, Baby. It's just fantastic, the opportunities they gave me.
So, I'm surprised at your next choice, which is Elton John and Rotten Peaches. Why this?
Madman Across the Water was an album I loved when I was young. So did Sid Vicious too, and quite a few people, because it was so astounding and huge. There were so many tracks on it. The production was brilliant and his voice was excellent. And the lyrics of Bernie Taupin were something else. But the one song that I never focused on the album was the track Rotten Peaches. And now I look back on it, maybe my shyness hid it.
But hang on a minute. I never thought I'd hear Johnny Rotten, or the man he would become, say, well, the lyrics of Bernie Taupin were absolutely fantastic. I thought that she hated all that and wanted to kill all of that had come before.
No, kill the institution.
Yeah.
Music had become not the geniuses therein. It's the same with the royal family. I don't despise them as human beings. I just despise the institution. There's where the corruption is.
All right, then, here we go. This is John Lydon's next choice. This is Elton John and Rotten Peaches.
Rotten peaches, rotten in the sun. Rotten peaches, rotten in the sun. Since I've seen that devil fruit since the world begun. Mercy, I'm a criminal. Jesus, I'm the one. Rotten peaches.
That's Elton John, Rotten Peaches, and that's John Lydon's second choice today.
Can I add that I've seen Elton John live when I was very young. That's before he was famous. He just went on and played his piano, and I thought that was very impressive.
So do you think seeing Elton John was one of the things that started germinating in your head what would become punk and everything?
Well, I love the poetry of the lyrics, you see. And I always wanted to be a writer. And indeed, I've never failed an exam or a test on English literature or English language. Those are my two favourite subjects. So it all goes hand in glove for me. And my other all-time favourite would be The Kinks, Ray Davies. I think the lyrics that that man comes up with are just sensationally good.
Yeah, he is one of the great English poets, isn't he?
I think so. And even Brian Ferry, too. Many would find that odd in the indeed this show of oddness.
Yes, I thought Brian Ferry was just a showman.
Oh, no, excellent, excellent. Because his songs open you up into a world of corrupt ballroom dancing. So that's really perverse and thrilling.
You're right, that's exactly the vibe he's giving. Listen, you said just before we played Elton John there, you were shy, were you?
I was shy when I was young, yeah. But we'd say shyness ran in the family because my mother was terrible shy.
And tell me then about meeting Sid. And I mean, I have to say, I find it ironic that the Sex Pistols are going around doing gigs without you now, because like you and Sid were the core of the band, really, weren't you? You were what it was all about.
Well, there we have it, you know. The all-time losers are going out and proclaiming their dislike for me, but they can't do bugger all without my songs. irony is superb. And for me, I've got to say, maximum entertainment. It's like a bunch of also-rans.
Now, I did see, so they're doing these gigs where people might be aware. The guy's name is Frank Carter, is he? And they did a gig in London and all the gang showed up for it. Noel Gallagher was there, Bobby Gillespie, Paul Weller, all these people who used to be cool, kind of. They were all there for it.
That proves to me just how deeply rooted the jealousies are. You know, let's put them all on a cruise ship and send them off into the Mediterranean. And we'll call it Uranus Travels, shall we?
So listen, what about poor old Sid? Was he very important in the in the roots of what became punk as well?
Yes. I wanted him in the band, and I'm sad to say it kind of destroyed him, because I never bothered to ask the question, can you play? Until it was too late.
And did he ever manage to learn?
Well, to quote Lemmy, you know, from a Motorhead fame, because we asked Lemmy to give him lessons, and Lemmy within a few days was ringing me and saying, like, look, he's got no talent, he's got no musicality, and he's tone deaf, and his bass guitar, he wears so low, he can't reach the fingers. And this was all my fault. And of course, he went on to, you know, dabble with heroin and the like. So, and that was a sad demise. The heroin you usually find is in people that find something inadequate in themselves and they use that as a disguise for bravado. It doesn't work.
Did you ever do it?
I had to try everything. I'm real nosy, me. I hated it. Hated it.
So, John, did you enjoy your time with the Sex Pistols?
Not really. Looking back on it, it was just a constant battle of them versus me. They never really made room for me to fit in. The resentment from pig ignorant Steve Jones was overwhelmingly delicious, and so I stayed.
But it must have been exciting that you're a bunch of young guys and you're suddenly at the leading a cultural revolution. I mean, you must have realized at some point.
It was exciting for me because I was thrilled with the fact that Steve Jones's guitar was slightly off. It meant that I could learn my way in to sing the ideas I was contemplating all the time. I turned books and novels from in my head into songs, and I cut the words down so that, well, it's something my English teacher told me, the best English is the simplest and most direct. And so there you go, I brought anarchy to the UK.
Okay, your next choice is the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, Canyons of Your Mind. Tell us about this.
I just love this band.
This is the B side of our platter, sports fans. And I'm singing just for you, covered in sequins.
In the canyons of your mind, I will wander through your brain to the ventricles of your heart, my dear. I'm in love with you again. Cross the mountains of your chest. Through the holes in your string band.
That is the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, Canyons of Your Mind, and that is John Lydon's next musical choice today. Why do you love it so much, John?
I grew up listening to the Bonzos. They were hilarious to me. They used to be on many British TV shows, and always treated as somehow eccentric British chaps, which, of course, they were. But their humour cut through everything. Everything. They were just sensational to me. Their use of instruments, that guitar solo there, is epic in my mind.
In the way that the
exactly
Goons...
Exactly the wrong notes, done so beautifully.
So in the way that the Goons were kind of influential on the Beatles, with the Sex Pistols and punk, was there an element of that British kind of eccentric, farcical, absurdist kind of humour in there as well, yeah?
I think to be a human being, you have to have an element of that. Otherwise, you're just a complete narcissist without any sense of humour. And humour is vital. And I think the best way and most positive way to get a message across, I think it far surpasses intellectualism, for instance. I don't think the band, the Sex Pistols, no, they wouldn't have known any of this stuff.
So they were playing away there in the background, not thinking too much about what was going on while you were conducting this vastly thought-out art project. I love it. I love it. And they didn't know how lucky they were, did they?
No.
Okay, so we'll go to your next choice. which is a quintessential LA band. Before we get to it, actually, I think you were evacuated during the LA wildfires recently, but your house was okay. How is LA recovering, or is LA ever going to be the same again?
It will be if they get the Democrats out.
Really, you're with Trump on that, that the Democrats have destroyed LA.
The fires can be pretty bad here. There's no sense of advanced precautionary activity from past regimes. And that was an outrage. There was one particular fire, I think it was in 96 here, where it came right to my front gate, right up close. And until you felt the heat of and ferocity of a fire, you'll never know what that experience is. What it taught me and my lovely Nora, who was alive at the time, was that property doesn't mean anything. Our lives were in danger.
Yeah.
And that never leaves you.
And so you blame the Democrats. Are you still a fan of Donald Trump, even at this stage of the game?
I've never been a fan, but I think if a business is broken, get a businessman in. I don't care what his extracurricular activities are.
Yeah, so how do you think he's doing and managing the business so far?
Oh, bloody well.
Yeah?
Yes. All the haters are out in full making fools of themselves. The system, which I call the shitstem, was truly broken with politics as usual. That had to stop. Yes, he's come in with a wrecking ball. Good. That's very much like what the Sex Pistols did. So I do make a comparison there. Will it be an eternity of him? No, of course not. Is he the new Hitler? No, of course not. He's a very unpleasant fella, actually. I've met him once. Didn't like him at all. But I'm aware that if something's broken, get it fixed. You don't have to like your toilet repair person to have a toilet repaired.
And what about Elon Musk? So do you think he's doing a good job?
Well, I love it that he's being called an idiot on American TV. This idiot sent rockets into space and brought them back. That's some kind of idiot there.
What do you make of the UK now?
A mess.
Are you glad there's a Labour government in?
I am not. The Tories were bad, but now, curses be upon him, Starmer is really, really worse. It's what I've always said. I don't like politicians. Their business as usual, which they call the art of compromise, is nothing more than sustaining their careers.
You know where we started all this was talking about LA, because your next choice is The Doors and Crawling Kingsnake. So tell us about this.
Yes, well, I loved The Doors since I was very young. I think it was a friend of mine, his older brother, had Doors records, and I never liked them at first until Nora actually bought. They were called Super 8s. She had a rundown car, but she bought one of them Super 8 track.
The cartridges.
And oh my God, when I heard those songs like Driving Down the Freeway, it made such sense to me. And it's been warm in me ever since.
Okay. John, tell me a little bit about Nora. You were with her all your adult life, more or less, really, weren't you? It sounds like it was a very special relationship, was it?
Yeah. Lucky enough, we found each other. Took a long time in the making. But once it was solidified, that was it forever. She was and always will be my best friend ever.
And what was the magic about it? Because it sounds like you did have a love that a lot of people never know in their lives.
She would not let me get away with nonsense. Yeah. Not ever. And I wouldn't let her get away with any of her nonsense either. And that kept us alive. The arguments were delicious because we'd always end up like just falling on the floor laughing at how far we could take the insults. You have to clear up grievances. I hear too many of these chat shows of women complaining about the men not putting down the toilet seat. Don't let these things cause frictions and fractions. sort everything out immediately. And in an honest relationship, like me and Nora had, that's exactly what went on. I even wrote a song about repairing toilets.
Okay, in a premonition of Donald Trump coming to repair the toilet of America. It must have been...
Oh, you're fun, you are.
It must have been hard to become Nora's carer when she got Alzheimer's. But in a weird way, you seemed to find that it was just another way to love her, did you?
Yeah. Looking after people, it seems to have been a natural instinct of me, brought on when I was very young, because my father had to work away to earn money. So I was, and I love this, given the role of man of the house. This is four or five. So my role was to look after my younger brothers and get them ready for school, because my mum was ill a lot of the time. She had endless miscarriages. And so caring for people, changing nappies and things like that is not a problem to me. And if anything, it brought me and Nora so close together. We'd make a laugh out of it.
Yeah, because people talk about it as a very sad and challenging time, that journey.
It's heartbreaking. It's an endurance course. It makes you question your sanity from time to time. You have to give up so many things. You can't run anything like a regime because of the chaos of the illness. But at the same time, she never, ever turned into a misery. Never, ever moaned. Just laughed at everything. And so watching our old comedies, you know, I mean, everything from Steptoe and Son to Father Ted had her in fits. And it was beautiful and brilliant to share that with someone who knew she was losing her memory and supporting her through that. I think I'm privileged to have been allowed to do that, actually. Privileged.
And when you put it like that, someone who knew she was losing her memory, so she was very aware of what was happening to her, which must be kind of terribly sad as well, is it?
Yes. But it's to how we were with each other. You have to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, it's, I suppose one of the worst elements was, this is many years back. We would go back to 9 or 10 now, but driving, she loved driving. But she just forgot where she was driving and stopped the car in the middle of the freeway, which was a hell of a dangerous thing to do in America. And so from that moment on, I told her, you cannot drive ever again, and explained to her what was happening. And so she noted that her brain froze. She didn't know why, but we went on from there. And then we went through various different doctors for advice. And so she was grasping that there was something wrong.
Did you know before she knew then, yeah?
No, we knew together.
You knew together. Okay, let's go back to that 8-track cartridge she put into the car, and she played The Doors for you. So here's your next choice, The Doors, Crawling Kingsnake.
Yeah.
The Doors' Crawling Kingsnake, and that's another one of John Lydon's music choices today. Of course, John, the Doors tried to continue on after Jim Morrison died as well with a few albums, just like your lot.
I know. But at least Jim was dead. I'm going back to that. Yeah. You know, the audacity of it is just overwhelming.
Yeah. Are you living alone now, John?
Yeah, I am. And I have to get used to that. I can't see me forming another close relationship. It's never, ever going to work. That one was so solid with Nora that it's irreplaceable. And it'd be unforgivable to think that I'd just trot some dolly in her stead. No. You know, but that's all right. In isolation, I kind of am getting healthier.
Okay.
Nearly 2 years now.
You must have been lost without her, though, were you?
Ah, Jesus, I just hit the bottle like you wouldn't believe. But the tragedy of that is that I drink myself sober, and it still didn't solve the problem, but it gave me a hangover on top.
Yeah.
You could turn to booze, drugs or whatever, but it won't do you any good. But at the same time, you actually need to go through that phase in order to recover properly. And I'm not fully recovered. I don't think I ever will be. Okay. And why should I?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've lost a major, major driving force in my life. And the hardest grief of all was that her last day of life.
Yeah.
On earth she was in such pain and gasping for breath. I think they call it the death rattle, but that was a nightmare. And it's only recently I've been able to sit down and run these memories through my mind. It was just way too painful before. And now I'm flicking through the photographs of when she was dead. And that's an awful thing.
Yeah.
But it isn't. There's something so Irish in me about that I don't find it morbid.
Yeah, she's at peace in those pictures.
Very much so, which I was terrified and frightened of looking at. But I'm glad I took them.
Yeah. John, your final piece of music today is a Doris Day song, It Could Happen to You. Why have you chosen this?
Oh, I love Doris Day's singing in the big band era. Just, I thought she was fantastic. I know there's all the sarahs, and I just come up from the windy city, it's mighty pretty, all that stuff. I don't like so much because I see it as the industry got hold of her and took away her real potential, which is communicating with a massive jazz band. It's just delicious. I highly recommend people to go back and listen to that stuff. And there you go, you'll get the empathy in her voice. And so she just reminds me of my mum. Can't help it.
Okay, and we're back.
In the nicest possible way.
And that brings us right back to where we started. So look, Public Image Limited played Dublin's Olympia Theatre on June 12th, Dolan's Warehouse Limerick on June 13th, City Hall Cork on August 15th and Custom House Square Belfast on August 16th. Your speaking tour is, it's called I Could Be Right, I Could Be Wrong, is it? And it kicks off.
Yeah. Don't ask me.
Okay. It kicks off in Armagh on September 4th. More details on johnlydon.com. John Lydon, it's been an education and it's been an absolute pleasure. Okay, we'll finish now on your final music choice. This is Doris Day. It Could Happen to You. John Lydon, it did happen to you, and thank you very much for telling us all about it.
And may the road rise with you and your enemies always be behind you. May they scatter, flatter, batter and shatter.